Good morning. Some years ago, when I began my preacher training, I was asked by a church, where would you like to be? In the pulpit or at the lectern? My reply was in the vestry. And that's just how I feel now, only I don't think we've got a vestry to disappear into. But that's how I am at the moment, just a bit like this. And as I've not preached here before, and as I do every time I go to a new church, I share a little bit of myself with you so that you get to know me a little bit better. I was born in a village near Mansfield called Rainworth, or Renneth, if you know the area fairly well, in 1960. This is the only church I've been to in several years where I'm conscious of the fact I'm not the youngest. So I've never minded saying that before, but this is the first church that I've, for many years, that I've not been the youngest. My dad was a miner. My mum was a seamstress. I came to know the Lord when I was 14 through a film that you've probably heard of, The Cross and the Switchblade. And as a young person, a friend at school invited me to her church where they were putting films on each month. And this one was the penultimate one. Seeing as I've got a bit of time, I may as well add little bits. When I got there, and it was at a big theatre, the one in Mansfield, if anybody knows the theatre in Mansfield, and I was right on the inside, and you have to think that I'm a very shy 14-year-old, and if you put me in a place I'm not comfortable, I'm still a shy 58-year-old. And I heard people going forward, and I wanted to go forward, but the people next to me were saying, oh, I knew she would go forward. I knew they would do that. So I sat there and sat there, and in the end, I didn't go forward, but I talked to my friend the next day, and then I prayed that evening and asked Jesus to come into my heart. I'd not been to church up until that point, so I'm not someone who has come through Sunday school. My family did not go to church. They didn't believe. They thought we were all hypocrites. And so it was quite, this was almost like my rebellion, if you like, of starting to go to church. So it was a Pentecostal church that I went to because I didn't know anything about church, and they were the ones who had put the film on, and that was the one my friend went to, so that's where I began going. I married at 18, and I've had three boys, but the marriage didn't last. I knew within the first year that it was a mistake, but because of my vows, I stayed for 12 years, and then I left with the three boys into a women's aid refuge. Because I felt I had to, I left the church as well, because my vows had meant something, and I was breaking my vows to God, not just to my husband. And so I was away from church for 5 years, and then I began going to a Methodist church that was at the bottom of the street. The day I turned back to God, I asked for one of those daily bread readings that you can get. And that evening, the reading was the prodigal son. And that is just how I felt, as if I was coming home. I did several different roles in the church: Sunday school, welcome, in the cafe. And then I got talked into trying to preach. And I'm still trying to preach. Although I was accredited in 2001. Which is the same time as Gareth, because Gareth and I did our studies together, and so our accreditation service was together. So that's how I knew him before moving here as a 20-year-old youth worker. Soon after this, I began the candidating process, which is different now, but you had to have an interview, and the interview was with like 20 people, all check in to see if you can go forward. And I was accepted to do foundation training. So at Nottingham University, I did do the foundation training and got my certificate. But at the second part of the training, I was turned down by district. After 13 years on my own, I met David, and we married in 2004 on February the 14th, which is Valentine's Day. At this time, I was also working as assistant minister in three churches in Nottinghamshire, Arnold, Calverton, and Woodborough. David was coming up to his retirement and decided that he didn't want to stop. He didn't want to sit down, as it's called. So he accepted an active supernumerary post in Holt in Norfolk, which should have been a part-time post, but it was more than a part-time post, especially when someone can't do half a job and it has to be done properly. It takes a lot longer to be done properly. In 2010, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I had a mastectomy in the April, then began chemotherapy in July, and then began radiotherapy in December, finishing all the major treatment at the end of January 2011. I'm still on tamoxifen now for a couple more years. We moved to Dereham in Norfolk when David fully retired. We thought Dereham was a good place to be. Not in our original plans. Our original plans was always to come back this way because all my family are in Mansfield. So I'm not just a Mansfield girl, or everyone I know in family-wise is in Mansfield. But we thought that Dereham was near to the hospital that had been really good to me, and also the A47 when we needed to come back and see family, although it could be between 3 and 4.5 hour journey, depending on the traffic and the tractors and the caravans and accidents and all like that. So it got a bit much for us. So that's why we've moved here. Whilst at Dereham, we both worked with three churches, David in pastoral charge and me doing most everything else, and mostly pastoral work. And it was a hard role, not just because David was the line manager, which puts a new aspect on working, but also is a difficult situation that we had to cope with. But I do enjoy pastoral work, and hopefully it shows with those that I've been to see or talked with. Through all of this, a few years ago, I was also diagnosed with thyroid problems. And that made me extremely ill. But now the medication is under control. Everything seems fine. We're now little in, little over. And I'm now the pastoral worker here. And I would also add that as pastoral worker, it would be nice if people could sort of say someone's struggling, or if they're struggling, or if they just want a chat about something. I don't have to necessarily come to your house. We can meet here. We can go out for coffee. Whatever you like, but I'm quite easy to talk to, I hope. Through all of this time, I've known God's presence and God's love, and it's always been with me. And there's a difference with knowing and feeling. When we feel, we get it mixed up a little bit because we don't always feel God's presence. But we can know that God is there. And I think that's the important thing, that we know God is with us. So I hope you haven't minded me sharing a little bit about myself. I've cut it quite short. I've not gone into too many details. And I hope the people who've heard it before don't mind hearing it a second time. But I hope I'm not the stranger that you thought I was before I told you a bit about myself. And now I'm going to read the Jonah reading from the Message. Now, this is where David will cringe, because you're not meant to use the Message in the middle of a service, but I have a reason for it. Then Jonah prayed to his God from the belly of the fish. He prayed in trouble, deep trouble, I prayed to God. He answered me. From the belly of the grave, I cried help. You heard my cry. You threw me into ocean's depths, in a watery grave, with ocean waves and ocean breakers crashing over me. I said, I've been thrown away, thrown out of your sight. I'll never again lay eyes on your holy temple. Ocean gripped me by the throat. The ancient abyss grabbed me and held me tight. My head was all tangled in seaweed. At the bottom of the sea where the mountains take root, I was as far down as a body can go. And the gates were slamming shut behind me forever. Yet you pulled me up from that grave alive. O God, my God, when my life was slipping away, I remembered God, and my prayer got through to you, made it all the way to your holy temple. Those who worship hollow gods, God frauds, walk away from their only true love. But I'm worshiping you, God, calling out in thanksgiving, and I'll do what I promised I'd do. Salvation belongs to God. Having a look at yourself is not a good thing. I hope you could see the difference in some of the words. And last week we heard that Jonah and us cannot outrun God. This week we have Jonah's prayer in the big fish, in which Jonah was inside for 3 days and three nights. And in Matthew 12, verse 40, Jesus says, "For as Jonah was three days and three nights in the belly of a huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." Although there is some semblance here about Jesus' death and resurrection, I don't feel that they're exactly the same, because Jesus actually died and was risen from death, and Jonah was still alive. Jonah's prayer is a prayer of thanksgiving, not a prayer of deliverance. Jonah is thanking God for saving his life and not letting him drown. Last week we learned not to get bogged down by the big fish. But I'm afraid my little chapter is more or less all about the big fish. But I want to read what one of my commentaries says about the big fish. All kinds of attempts have been made to defend the credibility, or at least the feasibility, of this episode, but none with any success. We must frankly admit that if the incident is true, and the book of Jonah is historical, this is miraculous. If the book is taken as a parable, of course the question does not arise. But we do know that sperm whales and large sharks capable of swallowing a man have been identified in the East Mediterranean, and it is probably one of these creatures that is meant by Jonah's great fish. So that's all I'm going to do about talking whether this is real or not. I've explained what the commentators explained it, and I'm going to leave it at that. Jonah was delivered by a big fish that God had sent, and was overwhelmed that he had escaped certain death. This prayer to me looks as if it's Jonah's second prayer, his first prayer having been said while he was going in the water. Because otherwise, I can't work out how the Thanksgiving bit came in. If he's thanking God for saving him from the water, he must have prayed and asked God to save. And one of the commentaries I read did agree, but that's my personal opinion. That's how I read it. In verse 2, Jonah says, "In my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the depths of the grave, I called for help, and he listened to my cry." So the big fish, as it were, is the answer to the prayer that Jonah made. Now, I've thought about this quite hard, and I find it very difficult to imagine anybody thanking God for being in a fish. But Jonah did, because he was saved. He wasn't drowning anymore. And the only picture I can think in my head of what it might have looked like is from Pinocchio. I can't do PowerPoint, which is why there's nothing on the screen. And I was so nervous, I thought it's not worth the effort trying to work it out. But I did look for some pictures of Jonah in the well, and I never found one. But the only thing I can think of is Pinocchio. And that's all I'm going to say about Pinocchio as well. Jonah's prayer is written like a psalm, and many of the psalms are prayers. And in Jonah's prayer, he quotes some of the psalms. Verse 1, my distress, comes from Psalm 18:6 and Psalm 121, verse 1. In verse 3, all your waves and your billows passed over me. And that's from Psalm 42. Verse 4 says, from your sight. And that's Psalm 139. And verse 7, my life was ebbing away. Psalm 142. Again, this is similar to Jesus praying on the cross. He also quoted Psalms as he was dying. Jonah must have been so scared to have actually run away the way he did. It would have been very easy for me to run away this morning. I've been sort of saying to David, I don't feel very well. I sneezed and I said, I'm getting a cold. I think you can go and do it for me. You can read all my notes. And that's how I am most Sundays if I'm preaching. Even though I've been accredited that long, I still feel as if it's new. And it's a big responsibility. And so I do get like this everywhere, but particularly today. But Jonah must have felt as if he was at rock bottom. And he says, I have been banished from your sight. And he would have thought that being banished out of God's sight was a punishment by God, that he hadn't done what he was going to do. I don't see it as a punishment. I see it as God turning him around to do willingly what he was asked to do. Jonah felt that he had moved out of God's presence. And when he was saved from death, he returned back into God's presence. And to me, being away from God's presence or God's sight is more than I think I would be able to cope with. Jonah must have hit rock bottom. Many of us, if not all of us, have felt at rock bottom at some point or another in our lives through different circumstances. You've heard my testimony, so you know I have had many downs. It's not been always on the high places. But God's love has kept me going. And one way of looking at reaching rock bottom is that there's only one way to go, and that's up. Jonah used the time in the big fish to reunite with God. In verse 6, Jonah says, to the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. But you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord, my God. God brought Jonah up from rock bottom. And he can bring us up from rock bottom too. Jonah said in verse 7, when my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord. Often we act the same way. When life is going well, we tend to take God for granted. But when we lose hope and cry out to him, we need to look to God in both the good and the bad times. And then we'll have a stronger spiritual faith, spiritual life. At the end of the prayer, Jonah repents of his wrongdoing not going to Nineveh, and promises to do what he had promised. Now, I'm assuming that might have been when he became a prophet, because I'm assuming that probably prophets made promises to God at the time, but I don't know for sure. Jonah obviously found the Psalms a good way of praying. He changed some of the words to make them personal to him. In verse 5, he says, "Seaweed was wrapped around my head. This is the reason I used the message, to show a difference." And now I'm going to read it again, but from the Dramatic Bible. There is a purpose behind this, I promise. "From deep inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. 'In my distress, O Lord, I called to you, and you answered me. From deep in the world of the dead, I cried for help, and you heard me. You threw me down into the depths, to the very bottom of the sea, where the waters were all round me, and all your mighty waves rolled over me. I thought I had been banished from your presence and would never see you, your holy temple, again. The water came over me and choked me. The sea covered me completely, and seaweed was wrapped around my head. I went down to the very roots of the mountains, into the land whose gates lock shut forever. But you, O Lord, my God, brought me back from the depths alive. When I felt my life slipping away, then, O Lord, I prayed to you. And in your holy temple you heard me. Those who worship worthless idols have abandoned their loyalty to you. But I will sing praises to you. I will offer you a sacrifice and do what I have promised. Salvation comes from the Lord." We had a training session here about Jonah, and a booklet that we were given that gave us little helps and hints as to what we should do. And a part of it was using the Psalms as prayers, as Jonah did. Now, we all, I struggle with prayer. And sometimes I struggle with knowing what words to say. And I was reminded of Acts on Tuesday at Sycamores, which is a pattern for prayer: adoration, confession, thanksgiving, and supplication, which is asking for things, either for other people, for ourselves, for situations. And that's a pattern that anyone can use at any time, putting it into order. And I've never actually used Psalms as prayers before, but I think it is a good idea to try and personalise them a little bit. Now, we sung "The Lord's My Shepherd" earlier, and this I chose mainly because it was my favourite hymn, and in a way it is my testimony, all in one song, and learning to trust and God being there forever, the little chorus that's added on. But when I was working in Calverton, I did ask people to rewrite the 23rd Psalm into words that they felt appropriate. And I'm going to read one that somebody has written who is very creative. "The Lord is my sat-nav. I won't get lost. He shows me the best routes where the traffic is light. He dismisses my road rage. He loosens my grip on the wheel. Though I find myself trapped on all sides by monstrous juggernauts of trouble, his angels cone me off in a safety zone. Surely I will make my way safely home through the traffic of modern life. Though faced with many changes of lane and roundabouts of decision, for you, Lord, know, I've set my coordinates for home." That has a resemblance of the 23rd Psalm. It's quite creative. We all had a chuckle when he read it, and he did allow me to use it. I'm not quite so creative, but I did have a go, and it was written about 14 years, so it was written before a lot of my testimony that I've shared with you happened. Jesus guides me on my journey with him and provides all that I need to get to the end. He gives me time of rest in wonderful, pleasant places so that I can be refreshed. He gives me the strength that I need for every step I take along his path. He is with me through the difficult times I know I will face. I will try not to be afraid and gain confidence in the knowledge that he is with me and will protect me from harm. When I reach the end of my journey, he will have a feast for me, and all those against me will be able to see how loved I am by God. I will know that I have been loved throughout all my life, and I will live in God's house forever and ever. So it's not particularly difficult to do. If you're in a place where you don't know how to pray, then maybe look at the 23rd Psalm or Jonah's Prayer or any of the other Psalms and put it into your situation. So I thought I'd have to have a go at doing Jonah's Prayer now. So this one was only done the other week. In my pain, I called to God, and he heard me. You sent me into situations that hurt me. I thought you had sent me away from your presence, but you are never away from me. The pain was too much for me. It engulfed me. I went as far down as I could go, but you brought me back into your presence. O Lord, my God. When I was in my pain, I remembered you, and my prayer was answered, and I was back in your presence. You are the mighty God who can do all things. With thanksgiving, I will give myself to you again. I am willing to do all that you ask of me, because salvation comes from you, O Lord my God. Again, if you want to look at the Psalms and paraphrase them to your situation, you don't have to show anybody, you don't have to do anything, you don't have to write it down. It may bring you a little bit closer to God through doing it. Jonah was at rock bottom, deep, deep down in the seas, and yet God heard him and answered the prayer. It doesn't matter where we are, what situation we are in, even if we are at rock bottom, God is there. It doesn't matter where we are, we can pray. It doesn't matter where we are, God will hear our prayer. It doesn't matter where we are, God will answer our prayer. If we are at rock bottom, God is the one who can and will save us and bring us out of that situation into his glorious presence. Amen. Let us just have a time of silence where we can reflect on what we think God is saying to us.